November 5th, hundreds of demonstrators protested on the steps of the Ohio State Capitol in Columbus, despite police attempts to make them disperse. But you won't see this on the nightly news. You have to go to Cleveland's indie media site. The mainstream media has adopted a see no evil, hear no evil, report no evil policy when it comes to the 2004 presidential election, despite over 200,000 reports of voting irregularities. Most of the reports came from the battleground states of Pennsylvania, Ohio, Florida, and New Mexico. At Michigan's indie media site, you can view a short movie made by volunteers for the Video the Vote project.
I've been voting here at this location for almost the last 10 years.
I have registered, and now they're telling me that they don't have it.
I get here today, for some reason my name is not on the list.
Like I say, I want to vote, and I'm going to vote.
The film shows white Republican challengers hassling African-American voters in polling places and hanging out in front of the poll after being asked to leave. And it shows longtime voters forced to use provisional ballots.
And they tried to send me from here to go over there so that my vote wouldn't count for the provisional.
Ray Beckerman is an attorney from New York City who volunteered to man a hotline run by the Ohio Democratic Party in Columbus. From Sunday, October 31st, through Election Day, he fielded about 80 calls, many of them before the polls opened. Beckerman says he received countless calls from people who registered by mail 2 and 3 months in advance in the Cleveland area, but their names never made it to the voting rolls. He describes the calls he got from longtime voters who were inexplicably dropped from voting rolls, although their names appeared on public lists of registered voters. And he received calls from frustrated voters who never received their absentee ballots.
I received an anonymous report from someone that a Republican friend of his received 3 absentee ballots and voted with all 3 of them. Now, I don't know enough about the procedures to know if someone could have gotten away with that or not, but it's interesting that a Republican got 3 absentee ballots and the Democrats did. Many of the Democrats never got their absentee ballots at all. Mm-hmm. Now, the Board of Elections people were discouraging people from voting, not telling them. Now, this is in the Democratic precincts again, telling them that if they show up, they won't be permitted to vote, and never telling them about the provisional ballots. You know, they were supposed to tell people, if you think you're entitled to vote and you're not, then you could file a provisional ballot. But they wouldn't tell black people that. They wouldn't tell people who lived in Cleveland that. Or, you know, I mean, it was just like such an obvious pattern the way things were. Now, on Election Day, there were very, very long lines only in Democratic areas. The news media, you know, have been bizarre in that they, you know, the days after the election, they showed some long lines and didn't, you know, just accepted that as if, oh, everything went smoothly, just some people had to wait on a long line. It wasn't some people. It was by design. In you know, it only happened in African-American neighborhoods. The really long lines only happened in African-American neighborhoods. And it didn't happen by accident. It happened because they reduced the number of voting machines in those areas, even though it was an increased turnout expected.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't because maybe there were malfunctions of machines.
No.
So they had to take them offline?
No. The facts are coming out now. In Knox County, which is a rural area, there were 2 precincts. Now, in one precinct, for 378 registered voters, there were 2 voting machines. In the adjacent precinct, for 2,000 voters, there were 2 voting machines. This was within the same Board of Elections and the same county. Mm-hmm. The only difference between these 2 precincts being that the one with 378 voters was a rural, solidly Republican area, and the other, although rural, was a college town. It was Gambier, Ohio, where Kenyon College is located, mm-hmm. where there were numerous college students and professors that Blackwell anticipated voting Democratic.
Beckerman is referring to Kenneth Blackwell, the Republican Secretary of State in Ohio, and also head of Ohio's Bush reelection team.
So the people in Knox County in Gambier, Ohio, waited as long as 11 hours to vote. That's the county where I spoke to this young man who had gotten online at 11:30 in the morning. He voted at 7 p.m. And when he left, the line was 150 voters longer than when he had arrived. And the last vote was cast in Knox County at 4 a.m. And at one point in the night, the election workers tried to convince these people to file provisional ballots. In other words, take away their right to have their vote counted then. Mm-hmm. But file provisional ballots. And these brave people, many of whom had been waiting 8 or 9 hours at the time, refused to accept them. I'm told that not a one of them accepted it. That's how these people fought for their right to vote. And I, you know, as my email circulated, when it gets to other people who were voter protection volunteers, either in Ohio or on hotlines that took, they all would write to me and tell me stories and stuff. Now, one guy was an outside poll watching volunteer, and he was telling me about, you know, he was in an African-American neighborhood in Cleveland, and the line was about 5 hours, and he was describing it graphically to me about how, I didn't even think of this, but people had their kids with them and stuff, mm-hmm. and people just were sitting on the floor, and the line would hardly move, and people from the neighborhood, the women from the neighborhood, were bringing them food and water and toilet paper. And the women from the neighborhood, some of them, as they'd be doing this, they would be weeping for these people and for what they were being put through. About 10 o'clock at night, a news crew finally showed up and started asking whether these ladies from the neighborhood who were bringing them food and water and toilet paper were doing it in order to influence the outcome of the election, showing like how the media are like so in the pocket of the Republicans. It's unbelievable. But lines of 4 or 5 hours were the order of the day throughout many of the African-American neighborhoods, especially in Cleveland and Columbus.
Now, you also write there was a problem with the touchscreen voting machines in Youngstown, Ohio.
Yeah, in Mahoning County, we got calls all day long about it. So why should there be more than one call about it? Because at that point, the machines should have been taken out of commission. But they were calling all day long about the touchtone thing. And it was, strangely enough, it was exactly that weird thing that was going around the Internet, like as a joke, because, I mean, everybody knew if they were going to meddle with the computers, like, why would they do something visible? They would do something invisible. Mm-hmm. But it was actually that. They were pressing carrying. It was coming up Bush. Then the black neighborhoods were blanketed with postcards advising them of incorrect polling places. And then some of these people would believe it because they made it look like it was from the Democratic Party. And then the people would go to the wrong place, and maybe by the time they got to the right place, it would be too late. And maybe they wouldn't find out for 4 or 5 hours until after the polls were closed. So, I mean, I didn't know the reason this was going on, but I heard later that a number of polling places were closed and changed at the last minute. Mm-hmm. You'll see only in black neighborhoods.
I also wanted to ask you about challengers. I saw a short clip on the Internet of somebody who was documenting challengers at an African-American polling place where the majority of voters were African-American, and they were actually hassling people and advising them how to vote.
Right, exactly.
Did you hear about any of this?
Yes. Now, it didn't happen to the volume that was anticipated. In other words, it was thought there were going to be 3,600 Republican challengers, and in every place they go, they're going to be hassling people. Well, some of them didn't show up, and some of them didn't conduct themselves improperly, but some of them did everything that was feared. Like it was illegal for them to talk to a voter, but yet they were doing it, and they were being permitted by the polling officials to do it. They were confronting and harassing voters. Then even those who weren't, you know, improperly directly confronting and harassing the voters were filing fraudulent challenges. Like, they would just put blanket challenges with no basis for it. Like, one African-American woman called me. She lived in the same place all her life, and she'd always voted in the same place since she'd been voting. and she was forced to answer questions about her citizenship. And under the law, if a challenge is filed on any particular basis, the Ohio law has a specific prescribed oath that has to be administered, which is kind of a lengthy oath. And then there are certain specific questions that have to be asked. In other words, the polling official will be breaking the law if there was a challenge to a voter for citizenship and didn't take at least, you know, I would say it would take 3, 4, 5 minutes just to go through the oath and the questions. Mm-hmm. And each time someone does that, that's someone who's not there to help people with the voting machines. Like one place where there were very long lines, they were saying it was one of the voters thought it was because they didn't have anybody to deal with the with these challenges. So the clerk was, every time there was a challenge, the clerk was taken away from processing people through regular voting. And one lady told me how she had next to her name, she had never been arrested in her life, and she had next to her name SOS felony. And she was calling me to find out what SOS meant. And she noticed that a lot of her neighbors also had felony next to their names.
Now, what were you able to do for people like that? Could that person vote on a provisional ballot if they had felon next to their name?
Well, the clerk knew that it was bogus. In this particular woman's case, she was allowed to vote because mm-hmm. the clerk knew that it was bogus.
I see.
I couldn't help people at all. I mean, I could give them advice or something. I could tell them, no matter what the clerks tell you, file a provisional ballot. Don't let them tell you you can't.
I see.
But constantly, clerks were telling people, how many people got to talk to someone like me to tell them that?
Beckerman says some precincts in Cincinnati turned all voters away for no reason. He took calls from voters who were turned away from the polls because they had recently moved, and he discovered a new voting law in place.
So in the University of Cincinnati, you know, there were a lot of new voters because there was a big voter registration drive among the students. Mm-hmm. So when they went to vote, even though they were duly registered and their name and signature were in the roll book, they weren't allowed to vote. They were forced to file provisional ballots.
And the reason was?
No reason.
No reason.
Just because they were new voters. In other words, the clerks were making up a new law of their own. Hmm. You got to understand, the whole election machinery there is in the hands of Republicans. It's like a strange law which provides that the Secretary of State gets to appoint the entire Board of Elections for each place.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever receive any calls then or find out later about any irregularities with the machines themselves from any poll workers?
Just Mahoning County. That was the only one that I took. But remember, number one, there were, let's say, 19 other volunteers on this hotline. Mm-hmm. Number two, there were a number of other hotlines, some of which were much bigger. Mm-hmm. Like there are 2,800 complaints from Ohio. The PFAW Election Protection Hotline has made their complaints public, and they have their database is up on the web. So if you go to if you click on Ohio, you get 2,800 complaints there. Mm-hmm. If you read that stuff carefully, you'll be in tears by the end of it when you realize what these people, the way these people were humiliated and disenfranchised. It's really a very, very sad commentary. And I just hope there are some honest prosecutors who are going to prosecute the people who did this stuff, because a lot of crime was committed in Ohio.
That was Ray Beckerman, a New York City attorney who took calls from Ohio voters for the Ohio Democratic Party hotline. You can find his article on the subject at www.spectrum2.com. Since November 2nd, several studies have questioned the disconnect between the exit polls that favored Kerry and the final vote that favored Bush. Some suggest the media has been complicit in trying to explain it. On BuzzFlash.com, you can see how CNN altered their exit poll data between 1 a.m. and 6 a.m. to match the final results. At 1:05 a.m., CNN reported that Kerry won 51% of the male vote and 53% of the female vote. By 6:41 a.m., they had flipped the exit poll results to read Bush winning 52% of the male vote and 50% of the female vote. The most recent study questioning the numbers was published last Thursday by researchers at UC Berkeley, who found that in Florida, discrepancies in the tallies appear only in counties with a certain kind of electronic voting, and that e-voting machines may have awarded up to 260,000 more votes to Bush than statistically possible. Members of blackboxvoting.org have been physically visiting each county in Florida searching for the actual vote. Bev Harris, who has been investigating e-voting machines and their pitfalls for several years, has launched the largest Freedom of Information Act request in history, asking for thousands of poll tapes. Blackboxvoting.org reported on the Portland, Oregon indie media site of just one of the smoking guns they have found so far. Last Tuesday in Volusia County, Florida, when Harris arrived to pick up the data she requested, she was given unsigned new printouts dated November 15th. She insisted on seeing the original signed poll tapes and was sent to a warehouse. At the warehouse, Harris was quickly barred from entry, but found many of the records she sought in a trash bag in front of the warehouse. And she found more after some dumpster digging in the back. For the whole story, go to Portland's Indy Media Center and check out blackboxvoting.org for updates as Harris's investigation continues. Finally, presidential candidates David Cobb of the Green Party and Michael Badnarik of the Libertarian Party have raised $150,000, enough to demand a recount in Ohio. The recount is expected to take place as soon as the vote there is certified. Meanwhile, hearings continue by groups like Common Cause to hear the frustrated cries of Ohioans who had no voice on voting day. Coming up, Liza Featherstone reads from her new book. We're coming to you from the trenches.